This edition of Section D was first broadcast on the 6th of August 2013 on Monocle 24, Section D in association with Lexus.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Section D, the weekly design hour here on Monocle 24 with me, Alad John. This week, Section D embarks on the first of a two-part special investigation into the historic and contemporary state of architecture and urban design in Istanbul. Over the course of this hour, we explore the origins of the recent unrest in Turkey, an urban dispute between the architecture community in Istanbul and the government in Ankara.
We were defending the public space, because all these transformations, and especially the shopping mall project, was kind of destroying the public nature of the park.
And we visit the port, whose development is synonymous with Turkey's construction-led boom, and a symbol of the sale of public land to private companies.
You always see the same persons, I mean the same businessmen, the same companies, who share the big portions of the city. It's obvious. Of course, they are legal. I mean, nothing is illegal, but it's not ethical.
Plus, we head to the new frontier of development in the Marmara Sea and explore the architectural legacy of the former Prime Minister, Adnan Menderes. That's all here on Section D with me, Alad John, on Monocle 24. On May 28th, a group of students, architects, urban planners and other activists staged a peaceful sit-in in protest at the attempted levelling of three trees in Gezi Park, central Istanbul. That night, the police raided the camp. In the days that followed, those demonstrating grew in number, and the police corresponded with aggression to remove the people from the park. After 4 days of police raids and escalating confrontations with protesters, the government ordered police to withdraw from the area around Taksim Square and Gezi Park, ceding control of the area to protesters on June the 1st. What became a nationwide protest against perceived autocracy began as an architectural and urban planning dispute concerning a government plan to redevelop Gezi Park, known as the Taksim Pedestrianisation Project. I've come to Istanbul to find out how still 2 months later, the argument that underlies the ongoing protest concerns the design of the city, why architecture plays a fundamental role in the social issues of Istanbul, and how Gezi and Taksim are now bywords for public discontent.
My name is Murat Çetin. I'm an architect and also I'm an academic. I work at Kadir Has University in Istanbul as an associate professor, and I took part in the protests.
Murat Çetin was a member of the protest camp from day one. He takes me on a tour of the area, beginning in Taksim Square. In terms of the actual project that the government was planning, I know it was a huge part of Erdogan's election manifesto.
Yeah.
The pedestrianisation of Gezi Park. To an outsider such as myself, that doesn't sound like such a bad thing. Yeah. The pedestrianisation, it's quite a nice title. It evokes kind of green spaces, it evokes no traffic. Can you explain why this was received so badly? Was it the lack of consultation, or was there more to it than that?
Partly the lack of consultation, but the government is very talented and very conscious about the use of catchy words like pedestrianization. Yes, it sounds very good, but the actual project was not a pedestrianization project at all. Because in order to take the massive traffic here, you need to excavate approximately 6 major tunnels around the square. And they have to be at least 2-lane each. And if you look at the streets and the width of the streets, you can see that they are not that big. So once these tunnels are excavated all around the square, for pedestrians, there is only about 1.5 meters to walk. So it is not realistic to attract people in terms of providing pedestrianization. I think these are deliberate acts of gentrifying this area and removing its ties with the surrounding settlements, and especially those people who are not very accepted by the government.
So looking at the events that happened over the last 2 months,
yes.
How involved were you in the events?
It was a part of the construction project that is going on for excavating the tunnels connecting Tarlabaşı Square to Harbiye area. This was again faced with a lot of reactions from especially Chamber of Architects, because it was destroying the unity of this whole area. So while they were constructing this tunnel, they started to remove some of the trees, although it was not in the project. So I was from the day one within the protests, because we started the protests not for these trees only, because of the whole public works project going on around Taksim Square. We were defending the public space, because all these transformations and especially the shopping mall project was kind of destroying the public nature of the park. So we were protesting against that. And that day, they started to remove a couple of trees on the very end of this park. And it all started with that. But the next day, they came with the tear gases and water cannons at the very early hours, around 5 o'clock in the morning, while people were sleeping here. So they continued. And people started to protest here, and they decided to stay here with their tents. And we were here until midnight. I was here, and we were singing songs, playing music. And after a while, people started to leave, and those people who were staying here, especially in that part, as you can see, there were a couple of tents and few people. And I was going back home next morning, and I saw the news that they were attacked around 5 o'clock in the morning. So I changed my path and I came directly here, and I saw that all the tents were burned down, and you could see the marks on the floor. So we continued to protest. It happened again the next morning, again 5 o'clock in the morning. Tear gas onto the sleeping people, water cannons and stuff. And this time they managed to remove people from here with violence and excessive force.
On the following night, private establishments began to open their doors to those injured or at risk from the protests in the area surrounding Gezi Park, now much greater in number. Istanbul Technical University was not one of these establishments, despite being home to many of the urban planning and architectural students and faculty at the forefront of the protests. At first, the Dean of ITU made the decision to reject their calls to open the doors to the architecture faculty building. 2 months later, the faculty's corridors are tranquil, cool and quiet. A far cry from the makeshift infirmary set up once the dean relented to pressure to open the doors of the campus and provide shelter to protesters.
We are in the Taşkışla building. This is the architecture faculty of Istanbul Technical University. This is one of the two buildings which are really close to Taksim Square. So Gezi Park, where everything has happened, is just right there. We can see it if we look at out of the window.
Cenk Derada, practicing architect and graduate of ITU, gives me a tour of the corridors of the faculty.
So we are here in the building, and there was a huge barricade because of the close distance to the area. And the day, on the 1st of June, actually, really different stuff had happened here. There was this reaction to the dean of the faculty, and because, you know, students were here, and police started to attack with gas bombs and water cannons. So students wanted to get into the building because, you know, something really strange has happened during the events, even though, you know, people, you know, some people say that this is a planned stuff, etc., etc., and, you know, on purpose, blah, blah. Something really strange happened. People opened up their houses, and also some private properties had been opened to the people. For example, a couple of hotels and almost all public buildings, you know.
But the university didn't open its doors.
The university didn't open because, you know, Dean didn't allow them to get inside, and he tried to close the door, even though he says that the back door was open, no one was knowing it, and there was this big reaction during the day, and then they ask a forum kind of stuff in the faculty. So all the members of the faculty and the dean and the students were there, and there was this big discussion. And then he decided to open up the faculty building as a medical point during the night. Only one corridor had been transformed into just first aid station. There wasn't that big tools and medicines, etc., but really basic stuff. So the main purpose was bringing here people, doing the first aid, and then transfer them to somewhere else.
We are at the center of Gezi Park. Gezi Park is being converted into a public park in around 1940s. In the first place, this was a Armenian cemetery. And around 1780-something, it's end of the 18th century, an army barracks were built here. And at the beginning of the 19th century, these barracks were some kind of associated with the fundamentalist religious riots of the time. And this riot was kind of suppressed, but the importance associated with this religious and conservative fundamentalist riot was associated with that building. So I think this is important, especially for conservative segments of the society. And also, around 1940s, the barracks were some kind of demolished for practical reasons. There was no political message behind that at the time. But obviously, in the collective memory of some people, it might. And after the demolishment of this barracks, this park was initiated, and it was contributed to the public life of the citizens. But again, it was initiated by a secularist government, and it was dedicated to İsmet İnönü as well. So I think it kind of carries a symbolic value.
So the symbolism isn't just tied down to the secularism. Mm-hmm. Is there something in the design of the park which reflects that secularism?
In a way, because, as I said, since it was dedicated to the second president, in the entrance there is a large empty area, probably you have noticed while we were walking, and that area was meant to be for a big sculpture of the second president. But it was never built anyway, and it was never realized, materialized.
Let's talk a little bit about the design of the proposed shopping mall, if we could. The proposal was to kind of reinvent or reconstruct the Ottoman barracks that were demolished in 1941. Why did the government want to reinvent an Ottoman barracks in the center of town?
The problem is rejuvenating. That's the term the Prime Minister uses, rejuvenating history. By itself, this terminology is kind of oxymoron. I mean, history is history. And old buildings are associated with their social, economic, and physical context. All these ties are disconnected from their context. So, and also for the last 70 years, it has been removed from the collective memory of public. So recreating a historical building, especially in the image of a shopping mall, I think this is really ridiculous. There is no major scientific need to resist this project, actually. The history is history, it is demolished, it's been 70 years. This park is being used and has a significant place now in the collective memory of the people who has been using the space for ages. Of course, there is a technique called reconstruction of historic buildings, but there are conditions for that. One of the conditions is that it has to have some kind of historic significance, which obviously has lost its significance 70 years ago. The other condition is that the majority of the building physically has to be intact. around 75-80%, it has to be intact. We are talking about a totally demolished building. Most of the people don't remember the building. There are a few photographs, probably 3 or 4.
Are there any designs of the or blueprint of the structure?
Exactly, that's another thing. There is no surveying or blueprint of the project. That's another condition for reconstruction. So there is no evidence, there is no document. So theoretically, we cannot build it. We cannot rebuild it as architects, as conservationists. So in total, it's a disaster to bring this idea. And especially if you see the projects, the original building from the photographs, as you can see, it's 1.5 story high. But the shopping mall, which was converted to a cultural center in declaration later, is at least 3 floors. So it is just using the image and the shell to symbolize some kind of meaning, but putting a shopping mall inside it is totally unacceptable.
Taksim Solidarity is a group which has kind of collectivized public protest against these moves. Mm-hmm. One of the demands they've put forward is the end to the sale of public spaces to private companies, large holdings and investors. That's a popular idea of protest against these moves. Why is that demand being made?
I totally agree with that, because this is the only public space in the center of Istanbul. So privatizing this area is obviously eliminating the public from the center of Istanbul. And it's giving it to certain people who can afford to do shopping there, to be able to park their cars underneath. But the rest will not be allowed in that area. So like all other cases of privatization, it has to be cautiously done. But especially in this case, it is impossible to do it. It is the only public area.
It's an area whose use the government planned to change with the proposed development of the Ottoman-themed shopping mall, justified by their view that the park is not being used in their preferred manner, if at all. But one group of architects, on hearing about Prime Minister Erdogan's plans to develop the park for commercial purposes, staged their own response to the plans. A short ferry ride to Kadıköy on the Aegean side of the Bosphorus, Herkes İçin Malmuluk, or Architecture for All, is an association of architecture and urban design professionals and students who, in their own words, work to solve problems and create collaborative thinking at the intersection of architecture and social issues.
I'm one of the co-founders of the Herkes İçin Mimarlık, which means Architecture for All in English. And Herkes İçin Mimarlık is trying to provide social solutions with architectural aspects.
I am Hasan Cenktevi. I'm also an architect. I am a member of the association, actually.
In Turkey, only architects are talking about architecture. And maybe Herkes İçin Mimarlık can break it, because architecture is not only about architects, it's about all the people. And we are trying to break it. And for the social issues, we are trying to, how can I say, detach architects from architecture and involve other people, other disciplines, other professionals in the architecture field.
And also the regular people.
Yeah, the regular people.
Because right now, the main thing in the whole country's economy is construction. You know, construction projects are right now leading the whole economy in Turkey. Government also supports this in this way. Government itself is a big construction company. Urban transformation is a big issue, and most of the time it doesn't support the rights of the people. Most of the time it supports the right of the ones that want to make construction, etc., or investments. So it's also a big social question.
Examining the assertion by the state that Gezi Park was not commonly used, Architecture for All created the traditional Gezi Park festivals to remind both the state and the public that the park is there to be enjoyed.
They turned it into a pedestrian area, but it's almost like impossible to walk there right now. During the first news, the foundation tried to create some kind of projects, maybe that will reinvent some questions about the area, about the reasons of the government.
And then we organized a workshop. It's called Herkes İçin Taksim. It means Taksim for All. And we organize picnic festivals in the Gezi Park in every 2 weeks. we made 10 festivals, and actually we started with 30 people or 40 yes. people, and after that we reached maximum 300 or 400 people. And it was a protest also, but it was not a conventional one.
Yes.
It was a new way to say we want to keep this park like that.
Yeah, and also use it in this way, because you know, normally there wasn't that kind of usage. Normally people won't come there and, you know, make this kind of events. They don't make picnics there, they don't have music there, etc., etc. But at the end, we also wanted to learn again the opportunities of the space itself. So that 10 events maybe makes us learn this kind
yeah,
of stuff
of course.
Again.
So was it an aesthetic issue that you had with it initially, a kind of aesthetic disenfranchisement with the proposed development?
It is in a way, the reaction comes in a way because of aesthetical reasons. From my point of view, we also discussed this in other environments, because you know, we always ask ourselves this question: if some kind of international famous architect would design something there in the park itself, some kind of a cultural center or something like that, what will we think about it? Will we you know, show any reaction to it, or will we accept? And that's why, in a way, it was an aesthetical question, or let's say a contextual reaction that we have made. But also it is because of its usage, the usage must be questioned from my point of view. You know, if you turn a park into a shopping mall and taking away all the green field and the trees, etc., etc., in a space which is already really dense, this is the biggest question: what for, why?
There was no discussion, there was no debate, there was no consensus before the project, and
there was this instant project,
and we saw only a video. Yeah. There was no plan, no information.
This apparent lack of detail in the plan was conspicuous from the outset, underlined by the allegation that the shopping mall, designed in the style of Ottoman barracks, was added to the pedestrianization project as an afterthought.
At the end, with the pedestrian project, with the area, another aspect was added, which was this Taksim building. So this was a new surprise and a new angle of the project. This we didn't accept at all, because it's a kind of fake, let's say, reconstruction. And the area where it should be built, I mean, it's a kind of heritage value area, because it was designed by Prost, you know, in 1940s. And the area has a very important park area of Istanbul, has a very important planning heritage value for Istanbul. So we didn't want to destroy it, first of all, and we didn't want, of course, to commercialize the area, which is a kind of very important, in many senses, many important public area of Istanbul. I mean, as I told before, it's socially, culturally, and also intangibly seen. It's a very important heritage area of Istanbul, a meeting area, a pedestrian area, also a historical area.
Deniz İnceduya is head of the Istanbul Metropolitan Arm of the Union of Chambers of Architects and Engineers, established in 1954 and affirmed as a public institution under Article 135 of Turkey's constitution. The chambers share accumulated professional knowledge with the public, overseeing projects related to planning, mapping, construction and architectural interventions. They provide a constitutional protection between the public and developers. The chamber opposed the original government plans for Taksim.
This was 1 year ago, it was 2012. We started an initiative about the Taksim Gezi Park. And we started as the Chamber of Architects. We always deal with this urban neo projects and urban transformation matters, as you would know. And we started to create a kind of a coordination for this project, to discuss it actually. Our aim was to discuss it with the other chambers and with the other civil society members who are very sensitive about Istanbul's future. So we started in 2012, and we called it Taksim Solidarity, which is a common name. name. It's not only the chambers, it's a kind of civil organization, and actually we also are part of it. The main aim was actually protecting Taksim area. This has several aspects, of course, and mainly focusing on the environmental sensibility.
During one subsequent demonstration, police detained many leaders of the Taksim Solidarity Group. Prosecutors filed charges of establishing an illegal organisation to commit crime, and police arrested and jailed Mojella Yapurca, General Secretary of the Istanbul branch of the Architects' Chambers, and six others, including the General Secretary of the Istanbul Medical Chamber. On June the 11th, they were released, pending trial, after a panel of judges found no evidence to support the charge. As thanks for the Chamber's involvement in the protest movement, the government, in a midnight bill, removed the Chamber from building planning protocol at law. This was unprecedented. Back in Gezi Park, architect and professor Murat Çetin explains the significance of this move.
It's a guarantee of public against illegal applications, unprofessional applications, looting of public resources. So, and also it controls the level of appropriateness of any project to laws and constitutions. So any initiative, even by the government, if it is against the laws or constitutions, the Chamber of Architects carries the case to the relevant courts and higher courts. So that's the big problem for the government. All the initiatives are stopped by the Chamber of Architects.
It's a checking and balancing idea. So it checks and balances any constructions that the government want to put forward.
Exactly. So it's not only important for architectural community, it is important for the public. If we are healthy in this park and if we are safe in this park, sitting on that bench according to the regulations and conditions of, say, ergonomy or any other design criteria, it is provided by the Chamber of Architects.
Okay, so this is a very striking move by the government to remove the Chamber of Architects from that due process. First of all, can you describe your reaction to that? But it is unprecedented. Also, what the practical effect of that move will be for not just the architectural society, but also for society as a whole?
Well, actually, for many years, we've been criticizing our own professional organization, Chamber of Architects, for many things. But they could be improved. Those minor issues could be discussed, but removing it totally from the system is a big crime for public rights. As I said, I mean, all the buffer zones and shields are kind of removed from the system. So any initiative which could be illegal, which could be against the constitution, which could be against public welfare, now there is nobody to stop them, to react them, to oppose them.
Murat, if you could describe the feeling. It's difficult to describe a feeling of a whole community, but something like the Chamber of Architects or your colleagues, both in practice and in academia, could you describe how the people you've spoken to have felt over the last 2 months and what that latest move symbolizes to you and the others?
Most of the people I talk to share the same view. So my views that I expressed so far are mainly shared by a majority of the community. People are worried, people are sad, people don't know what to do really. So most of the people are really worried about the future of the city and also the profession.
The General Assembly has passed this latest law by the government, but the President of Turkey, Abdullah Gül, is yet to give his approval. While Istanbul's architecture and urban design community await the ruling, the sense from those I've spoken to is one of anger at the present and fear for the future. But there is also a sense of hope. Just as Taksim and Gezi have become bywords for public discontent at the status quo, the younger generation of architects have become galvanised by an apparent victory in Gezi Park, where the proposed shopping centre, for now at least, will not be realised.
After Gezi Park events, we have a big opportunity in this architecture and social field, because the Gezi Park events raise the people's awareness of the physical environment, on their physical environment and their neighborhood. Now people are talking about their neighborhood, They are talking about what can we do for our neighborhood or what's going on here. It changes and it will change, I hope.
The most incredible thing, what happened after Gezi Park event, people said that everywhere is Taksim, everywhere is Gezi Park. So they started to meet in their neighborhood parks every night, you know, a couple of days during the week, etc. So they started to talk about the social events, problems of neighborhood, you know, some kind of situation about judge system or economics, etc., etc. So they start to go out and come together and to use those parks, let's say, in a way. Park is also a topic of architecture, let's say. In a way, they start to use those areas like gathering spaces. So maybe this is the most incredible thing after the events. The attitude of policemen remained the same. The attitude of politicians remained the same. Juridical system remained the same. Media, they don't talk about these events, remained the same. But people changed. We were talking about always, you know, this is the only thing that you can say, maybe proudly or specifically, let's say, this is the only thing. People change in a way, other stuff remains same, but we'll see what will happen next, because, you know, no one knows it still. Let's hope the change will spread around the whole system.
Despite our attempts to ascertain their side of the argument, both the Prime Ministry and the Istanbul Mayor's Office declined to comment on the issue. You're listening to a special Istanbul edition of Section D. We'll be back in a moment to assess one of the proposed developments synonymous with Turkey's construction-led boom.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Welcome back to this special edition of Section D. Having looked at the origins of the recent protests in Taksim Square and Gezi Park, we focus now on the port area of Istanbul, whose shoreline is up for development. The Galata Port project would redevelop 1.2 kilometres of land that stretches from just north of the Kerikoy ferry terminal to the edge of the shoreline campus of Mimar Sinan University, passing Istanbul Modern. The project was originally cancelled in 2005 in the wake of legal challenges and protests from the architectural and urban design community. Today, the plans for its construction reflect the changing tide in much of the city, where the selling off of government or public land to private investors for commercial purposes is met by popular criticism from the same urban planning and architecture camps. I set off to the shoreline to find out how these new plans will revision the city's port area, and whether much was known of the design of the development.
My father was an architect also on the 60s, and he was more working at this time for the government, and one of his work is the Atatürk Cultural Center, which is the opera house, which is still a big thing around the Gezi Park issues, and still it was in renovation process. And he made the airport, and at this time, it was the beginning of the 80s, I was in Vienna Technical University, and I spent 10 years of my life in Europe, based in Vienna, in Germany, in Switzerland, England.
Murat Tabanlioğlu, one of Turkey's star architects, was the man behind the original designs for the Galata Port development before the plan was scrapped in 2005. He is part of a design dynasty in Istanbul and explains how it was in his formative years of work that the changing tide for construction in Turkey took off.
When I came back, I worked with my father 3 years together. That was 80s, Özal time, our president. And he opened, let's say, the doors of Turkey to Europe or to the world. That means it was the new beginning of private developments. Sometimes these are BOTs. BOT is build, operate, transfer. You take the land, like in the Galata Port case, the land, the owner is the government or the municipality, and you are taking the land for 40 years or 30 years, it depends from the rules, and then you build, you reconstruct, and then you manage. all the airports in Turkey, like Istanbul Airport, is the same.
This 30 to 40 year management period gives the developer a finite time to make enough of a return on their investment, while the government, keen to maintain the speed of development, is accused of rushing through sales with no consultation on the tender nor the design process.
If you look at from the first instance, it's admirable for the government to try to make this the more public space, actually. But the way they try to make it public space is where they got reaction.
Ömer Kanipak is an architect and professor at Bahçeşehir University. We meet by the waterfront minutes before an iftar dinner begins.
Because they are not transparent, they don't consider the opinions of the public. They don't consult the NGOs or other independent consultants or the academic people or the people who know better about the urbanism issues. So they just try to privatize this area. That's the only aim.
I put this idea to Murat Tabanlioğlu, whose company, Tabanlioğlu Architects, is celebrated for the big government-led projects less prominent architects like Ömer Kanipak are referring to.
Of all the cities that I've visited, architecture plays such a fundamental role in the social issues of Istanbul. And this idea that of people having access to public land, and that is a decreasing thing in the city, is a huge issue for the people.
When we started making projects for private firms, of course they wanted to own their lands and to use the land. But they see in the last years, in every project, we are trying to mix the public land with the private land together.
So Doğuş Holdings is the company that has won the contract.
Yes.
They are also the company that own NTV, which was boycotted during the protests by a number of the population. Taking on this contract for a huge development on the Bosphorus in Istanbul is a massive job.
Yes.
What do they have to do right now in the wake of the Gezi protests?
Their task is much more difficult than 2 months ago now. I mean, because they got so many reactions. First, because of the way they broadcast. Second, I mean, they got this bidding process after that. I mean, they got this huge land. So I don't know. I mean, their task is very difficult.
That demand made by Taksim Solidarity, calling for the end to the sale of private land to large companies, looking at such a large company like Doğuş or Rixos Group, who have won the tender for the Yacht Marine down the coast. Is there a kind of public anger that it's a particular type of company that wins these contracts and there are allegations that they are all very close to the government?
Definitely, yes. You always see the same persons, I mean the same businessmen, the same companies who share the big portions of the city. It's obvious. Of course, they are legal. I mean, nothing is illegal, but it's not ethical. That's the case.
And now, after years, it was again a tender, but this tender was without a master plan. I don't know what will be the result. It's more in the hands of, or on the heart of the new owner. We are now not involved in this process. I think there is not a real control mechanism.
So for someone who isn't familiar with the Turkish planning process, a tender was submitted. Doğuş Holdings have won that tender. Yeah. But they've won that tender without a master plan, i.e. without the renderings for a new design.
Yeah. In this time, I think the government decided, because there are different tender processes in Turkey. This is again a BOT system. So they are leasing this land for 30 or 40 years again. Doğuş will give a big amount. But I think if you don't have a master plan, how you control?
Before the Gezi Park events, I was expecting a property crisis in Turkey to appear. Not this year maybe, but in a couple of years, we are expecting a huge property crisis, which will end up in a financial crisis like in Spain or like in Greece. Because I mean, whenever you try to make your economy better by pouring money to the construction industry, it's a disaster. For 10 years, it's a very successful illusion that we are living in. But I think we are coming to the end of it. This whole huge construction cranes which are turning over the sky of Istanbul and in other cities, all those energy projects, is a part of that illusion.
architect Omar Kanipak, ending that report into the Galataport project. We contacted Doğuş Holdings for a comment on this development, but they declined to come forward. You're listening to a special Turkey edition of Section D with me, Aled Can, on Monocle 24. After this short break, we head to the Prince's Islands off the coast of Istanbul.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Just off the coast of Istanbul lie the islands of Yasada and Sivriada, two siblings in the family of Prince's Islands in the Marmara Sea. Each island has a very different history. Sivriada, famous for some of the cleanest waters in the Marmara, was used for the mining of stones to build the Haydarpasa train station and other projects. Closed in the 1970s, the quarry, a hollowed-out shell at the heart of the island, is now overgrown, while former monasteries from the 10th century creep up from the earth. Yasada is known today mostly for its role in a darker chapter of Turkey's recent history. The island was handed over to the Turkish Navy after 24 years under government dominion, who constructed a naval college. The sports hall for the college housed the trial of the former Prime Minister of Turkey, Adnan Menderes, after the military coup in 1960.
Dün gece yarısından itibaren bütün Türkiye'de deniz, hava, kara Türk silahlı kuvvetleri el ele vererek memleketin idaresini ele almıştır.
Menderes was tried for, among other charges, the unlawful expropriation of private properties for the redevelopment of Istanbul without proper compensation and with forcibly signed releases from citizens. The legacy of architecture and urban design left by Menderes was a crime that he would pay for with his execution by the state.
Tarihe yasa adı mahkemeler olarak geçen süreçte demokratik seçimle iş başına gelen yöneticiler yargılandı. Ellerine kelepçe vurulan Başbakan Adnan Menderes'le birlikte tutuklananlar Marmara Denizi'ndeki Yassıada'ya götürülerek hapsedildi.
Both of the islands, like much of Istanbul, are now up for development. In the wake of the Gezi Park protests, a mobilized collective of islanders have drawn their line in the sand against the plans for construction for fear of the change this policy will bring. As explained by Aysen Koca, Chamber of Urban Planners for Istanbul.
2013 Haziran ayında Yassıada ve Sivriada'yı da içine alan bir plan değişikliği.
The Ministry of Urban Planning and Environment changed the law regarding Yassıada and Sivriada in 2013. They had already changed the law and removed protections on the islands in 2012. And the new law in 2013 now allows for construction to happen on the islands. Now, with the law change, it is possible to build hotels, restaurants, cafes, conference centers, and other tourist facilities in an area covering 3.7 hectares. The municipality of the islands launched a petition in cooperation with the Chamber of Urban Planners against such development, on the grounds that any development on Yassıada and Sivriada will open all the islands to a flood of people and construction and will overwhelm and upset the environmental and cultural balance of all the islands.
It's very symbolic for various reasons. I mean, you are having the court of Menderes try in a very isolated island. And then the decision, almost everyone know what would be the decision of this trial, and the decision was to send him to death. And he was an elected prime minister, in a way the first elected prime minister of Turkey. So from the history of democracy, it was a very dark period.
Yasha Adanala is an urban sociologist who recently visited the island with a team of architects, planners and local residents from the community of islands.
The problem is the Yassıada is the next frontier. It's almost like a gold rush in Istanbul now. Anywhere that hasn't been appropriated yet by the investors, by the what I call the urban transformation lobby, are becoming a target. So Yassıada is, even though it's hard to conceive, it's very desolate, it is very far, and it has all this symbolic history, is now one of the next frontiers. But the island itself is an archaeological heritage site, is an ecological protection area and urban heritage area. So It is an important conservation area. But what happens, all these status, the heritage status, has been lifted by this new proposal, by these new investors. And what we see, the government wants to deliver the island as a land to one of the institutions, the Chamber of Commerce and Stock Exchanges, TOP. So this was a new legal introduction. Now in Turkey, those semi-public bodies like chambers of commerce, they could get the building permits or the right to build in these projects without going through the tender processes. So this, what we find out, that there was a new plan for the island, lifting all these conservation rules that all based on certain facts and the needs of the space, and come up with a new plan. It's a very generous plan. The whole island has been designated as a construction site. It's total freedom. The investor can do whatever they want. There's no kind of legal boundaries or functional boundaries for them to do. So this is the case that we face with.
To experience the islands firsthand, I hire a private boat with the help of Bodgazada Islander İpek Özge. İpek is a sociologist and member of the local forum group. Yasada is a one-hour trip away by boat. As you approach, the shells of the former institutions built there loom over the shoreline.
The government sees these areas as empty, vast, unused areas. Like, they don't see common spaces as places that there's life in. It's the same as other parks, same as other rivers. So we are saying this place is not empty. This place is not an unused economic good. It's, the idea is to emphasize it, and it's very much relates to what we were wanting in Gezi movement as well. It's the same thing. The park is not empty area that you can use it as a profitable place. Like, what we showed in Gezi Park is that Taksim is not empty.
As with the trees of Gezi Park, the ecological issues represented by Sivriada are overshadowed by the political symbolism of Yesada's history. On the island, İpek takes me up to the makeshift courtroom that housed the trial of Adnan Menderes.
So this is an old sports hall, which was converted into the courthouse for the trial of the former Prime Minister, Adnan Menderes. It's hard to describe this place. There's seats on the side as if people could watch. This is really something. So there's graffiti on all the walls, in Spanish and Turkish. No pasarán, don't pass here. And there's remnants of the old sporting equipment, ropes hanging from the ceilings that could have been used for trapeze or... And there's a basketball hoop, what was a stand for a basketball hoop. You really get the sense that this is a forgotten chapter of Turkey's history. It's the place where they put on trial their former prime minister. No small event, but what was the courthouse, a former sports hall, has been left to rot.
I wonder why the government is willing to pass a law that would allow the levelling of an island of such historical symbolism, when Erdogan often refers to himself as a latter-day Menderes, an Islamist leader of Turkey, at odds with the military establishment. Yasha Adanala again.
I think the political tradition that is represented by Menderes and now Erdogan, let's say the right-wing politics overall in Turkey, development, like the physical development, building, construction of dams, construction of infrastructure, large mega projects, always signify progress, and that is itself the heritage of this political tradition, thought, starting from Menderes to later Demirel, Özal, Erdogan. So when you conquer the ecology, when you conquer the wilderness, when you conquer the islands, when you conquer the cities, this is the way in which you are making the country developed. This is the symbols of progress. So it's a very much kind of these Faustian understanding of development, that you have to tap into the nature, tap into the any resources, capitalize it, and the symbol of the or the guarantee of your ruling or the proof to your success is the material construction you made. So this is the logic, and in that sense Menderes was the one of the kind of grand builder of Istanbul's past. Like he involved when he was prime minister, making a huge motorway project, opening up avenues, demolishing heritage buildings and redeveloping it in according to the modernist vision. And Erdogan is a very good follower of this tradition. So in that sense, what Erdogan's government tried to do in Yassada, meaning that wiping out the heritage and using the island as a space for construction or just a urban land, is in line with this tradition, even though it is threatening to demolish the heritage that also very much valuable for this political tradition as well.
Yasha Adanalla ending that, our final report on this show. Next week, in part two of our Turkey special, we speak to the leading thinkers that have tracked the evolving landscape of this city from Mimar Sinan through Henri Prost to modern-day design. We explore the designers and artisan communities at the heart of the city and sit down with Deniz Orva, the new director of Istanbul's upcoming 2014 Design Biennale. My thanks to Caleb Lauer in Istanbul for his insight and willingness to help me put this show together, Alexandra de Kramer for her research, and the production skills of Holly Fisher here in London. I'm Alad John, and playing you out, here's a favourite of mine from the back catalogue of Turkish greats from a different era. This is Mugala with Çelik. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.